From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Adeline Baxter. In a special assembly meeting this afternoon, the City and Borough of Juneau introduced Phase 1 of its flood-fighting plan. This comes after August's record-breaking glacial outburst, also known as a yokolop, damaged nearly 300 homes in the Mendenhall Valley. The Assembly approved an ordinance that will allow the city to work with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on the installation of flood protection barriers along the Mendenhall River. The barriers are made by a company called HESCO. They're Army Corps recommended and relatively easy to install. According to City Manager Katie Kester, they're basically stackable heavy-duty sandbags that are about 4 feet tall and 3 feet wide.
Those HESCO barriers are what we would be lining the river with to protect life and property in the event of the next yokolop.
The Army Corps will donate the barriers free of charge, enough to line up to 4 miles of riverbank. But the city will be responsible for installing them at key places along the river. Phase 1 will focus on Killowich Drive and Meander Way. Those locations were selected because that's roughly where the water first breached the bank in August. The Corps also donated 60,000 sandbags, which the city will work to distribute to homeowners in flood-affected areas. It's unclear what the total budget for barrier installation will be, but the first phase may cost up to $2 million. The Assembly will discuss ways to come up with that money at a regular meeting later this month. City leaders hope the barriers can be installed over the next few months. In previous meetings, they've discussed more long-term solutions to minimize or prevent flooding altogether. But those solutions will be time-consuming, costly, and legally thorny. They'll require a more in-depth study by the Corps. The HESCO flood barriers are a more immediate solution, Kester says, though they're not perfect.
They're ugly, they're large. Again, they're designed for a 5-year lifespan. And while we will be expeditiously looking on long-term solutions, we really don't know what that looks like until that study has been done.
Most of the barriers will have to be installed in people's yards, and about 75 homes may be asked to put barriers on their private property. Kester says the city will start outreach to those homeowners this week. Members of the public who showed up to testify at today's meeting expressed support for the plan, but Clinton Singletary, who lives in the affected area, reiterated the need for long-term solutions too.
These events will continue happening as the glacier retreats, and from the research I've seen, they'll likely only get worse each year until effective mitigation is in place.
Suicide Basin, which is dammed by the Mendenhall Glacier, is bound to flood the valley again. And it's already refilling, which raised concerns about the possibility of another major flood this fall. But Aaron Jacobs, a hydrologist with the National Weather Service who attended the meeting, said the basin is only about halfway full and levels in the Mendenhall River are low. If it released right now, it would cause a moderate flood, much smaller than the one that happened in August. And as freezing temperatures kick in, Jacobs says the possibility of another release in 2024 will wane.
We've never seen one over the wintertime, not saying that it couldn't take place, but just in the past, we have not seen one take place in November, December, or January. If it doesn't release into the fall time, what that will tell us is that we could just see a fuller basin a lot earlier next year.
The city also plans to welcome the Army Corps of Engineers to a public meeting this fall to discuss more options for flood mitigation, but the date for that has yet to be announced. Katmai National Park and Preserve's annual celebration of brown bears gearing up for hibernation kicked off yesterday morning. KDLL's Hunter Morrison has a rundown of this year's Fat Bear Week and its chunky contenders.
Over the last several months, brown bears have been putting on pounds at Katmai National Park. The culmination of their efforts is celebrated during Fat Bear Week, where 12 bears are pitted against each other in a bracket-style competition for the adoration of online voters. The annual observance of Katmai's bears has exploded in popularity since it started almost a decade ago. Last year, Fat Bear Week saw its highest voter turnout to date, with over 1.3 million participants from over 100 countries.
It's an opportunity to share their stories with people around the world, and also to celebrate, you know, Katmai's robust ecosystem.
That's Mike Fitz, resident naturalist with explore.org, a website that live streams the bears at Katmai's Brooks River Falls. Contenders for this year's Fat Bear Week were announced Tuesday after an incident earlier this week where a large bear killed a rival bear near Brooks River Falls. In the running are several fan favorites. One of them is Grazer, last year's Fat Bear Week winner. She grew in popularity because of her dominant nature and hefty stature, often displacing male bears in the park. This year, though, Fitz says grazers focused more of her energy on raising a new litter of cubs.
She's probably not as fat this year, but there's a lot of stories associated with her that we can admire. Her fearlessness, her dedication to her cubs, her work ethic. She knew, again, you know, bears are single moms. They don't get any help from the male bears in raising cubs.
There's also Chunk, the most dominant bear on the river this year. He packs a punch at about 1,200 pounds. Yet, he's never won Fat Bear Week. A number of newcomers are also on this year's docket. Bucky isn't the oldest bear, but he's certainly one of the smartest. He's discovered a fishing spot all his own, under the cascade of Brooks River Falls. No bear has consistently fished there before, and Fitz says bear number 519, a teenager who just split from her mother, is also competing.
He's one of those young bears that's on its own, trying to figure out the world for the first time, and that could be a real challenge for some of these younger bears.
For the first time, longtime favorite and four-time Fat Bear Week champion, Otis is not in the running. He's one of the oldest bears in the park, but has not returned to Brooks River Falls this summer. Fitz suspects he may have passed away. Although the annual celebration is dubbed Fat Bear Week, the bears shouldn't get all the credit. Fitz says Katmai's sockeye salmon runs are the healthiest and largest in the world. Without them, there'd be no Fat Bear Week.
Brooks River is part of the Bristol Bay Salmon Run, and it's, you know, one of the last, is it probably the last great salmon run left on Earth. And to be able to share that story of the sustainable fishery of Bristol Bay and what salmon can bring to ecosystems, wherever they happen to be, I think is a really, really powerful message to bring to the world.
Fitz says the much-anticipated event isn't all about who wins, but rather showcasing the diverse stories of the bears in the running. He says organizers are always looking for new and unique brown bear stories to tell that'll resonate with online fans.
This is an event where, an election where all of the bears are worthy of the vote. So despite what you see in local and national politics, and you may be sort of apathetic or maybe not like the candidates at your disposal, I think every Fat Bear Week bear is certainly worthy of the vote.
Online voting for Fat Bear Week opened Wednesday and runs through early next week. You can vote for your favorite fat bear and follow bracket results at explore.org. In Kenai, I'm Hunter Morrison.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska says it uncovered a massive violation of medical privacy laws by a software company used by the State Department of Corrections. But the software company at the center of the complaint claims that's false and misleading, and that there was no breach of data privacy. The ACLU asserts that the electronic health record system used by the Department of Corrections was displaying private health information of dozens of incarcerated Alaskans on a training website since at least November of last year. It said that electronic records displayed diagnoses, prescriptions, and treatments of at least 74 incarcerated Alaskans. The electronic record system, called TechCare, pulled the records off of the training site on October 1st, after the ACLU publicly demanded that DOC and TechCare's parent company, NAFCARE, take down the site or make it private. But the company says it's not at fault. In a written statement on Wednesday, NAFCARE said the health-related information displayed on the training site was fictitious data, put there for training purposes. It stated that the training website had inadvertently been made public. NAFCARE wrote that its internal investigation found that none of the 74 patient records identified by the ACLU contained patient data from the Alaska Department of Corrections. The ACLU of Alaska says it filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services because of the gravity of the breach. Federal law requires that the DOC and NAFCARE notify the patients whose data was disclosed within 2 months. Reached Wednesday afternoon, the ACLU of Alaska said it doesn't plan to retract its complaint from the Department of Health and Human Services, despite NAFCARE's claim that it didn't publish any true information. It called NAFCARE's claim that it published false healthcare information about real Alaskans extremely troubling and of great concern, and said it hopes NAFCARE still notifies individuals who had allegedly fictitious medical statements about them made publicly available. Alaska had a record number of opioid overdose deaths last year. According to the State Health Department, 357 Alaskans died of overdose in 2023, and about three-quarters of those overdose deaths included opioids. Alaska was also the state with the highest increase in opioid overdose deaths per capita, rising by nearly 50%. Lindsay Cato directs Alaska's Public Health Division. She says the increase in overdose deaths is heartbreaking, but she says Alaskans are saving lives by distributing and using naloxone for overdoses.
What I do know is if we hadn't been doing what we were doing, at least we would be seeing about 100 more overdose deaths, most likely than we saw last year. So we need to not only continue what we're doing, but we need to do more.
The United States saw fewer overdoses in 2023 than in the previous year, down about 10%. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Healthcare workers in Alaska are also seeing an increase in fentanyl laced with xylazine in the state. That's an animal tranquilizer, sometimes called Trank. Kate Schneider is a physician assistant who runs South Central Foundation's detox facility in Anchorage. She says about 5% of the fentanyl in the city is now xylazine, and she says it causes serious problems because it wasn't designed for human use.
It causes vascular necrosis, which means like the blood vessels inside die. And that's not just from using IV, it's from being taken in any way.
Xylazine doesn't respond to opioid overdose reversal drugs like Narcan, but experts still always recommend using it to treat someone who's overdosing. It's 49 degrees and overcast at the Juneau International Airport. Tonight, rain likely mainly before 10 p.m., with a low temperature around 39 degrees. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high around 52. That's the latest from the KTOO Newsroom. I'm Adeline Baxter.